And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, an incredible NBA playoff game and the biggest blowout we have had so far. What they both mean moving forward. Plus, best case, worst case scenarios for SEC teams. We get the NFL schedule coming out tonight. What about the ACC football schedule moving forward? Greg Norman continues to embarrass himself. We'll talk about Tom Brady going into the booth. Some potential sleeper teams in college football. We'll catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery later on this afternoon. And a whole lot more between now and 3. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing phenomenal. Great night of NBA basketball. Obviously, the blowout happened, but good to see the Memphis Grizzlies get a win. Now this series is 3-2, so we'll see if it goes to 6-7 games. I'm doing phenomenal, Luke, on this beautiful Thursday in the Lowcountry. Glad to be with you, sir.
Yeah, likewise. I had my own night of basketball last night, as always on Wednesdays, and I know nobody cares. But, you know, I woke up this morning. I'm always a little beat up after a night of pickup hoops. I woke up this morning. I went to go get into my recliner this morning and turn on the TV, and I took a misstep. I stepped on the shoes that I left there last night because I was so exhausted. You just take your shoes off. You leave them there, and obviously I must be dehydrated or something. It always happens with that misstep. I stepped on the shoe as I'm falling into the chair, and I wish there was somebody there to, like, record it because it was quite the scene. I got a muscle cramp my right calf when it happened.
Oh, no.
And I went down in that recliner in a world of hurt, and that was very painful. So that's how I'm doing today.
A little beat up. Yeah, did you have a good performance, though? I mean, were we dishing assists out? Were we, you know, dunking? What was going on?
Yeah, some good passes. Started off shooting it pretty well, then I went ice cold for at least the second half of the night.
Like the Warriors last night.
Jeez. It's true. So it was a little rough out there. And if you ever get one of those muscle cramps, it doesn't just go away. Like, you feel it the rest of the day, and it still hurts.
It'll flare up my right calf. Like, every so often.
The worst is when it happens while you're sleeping, and it wakes you up in the middle of the night. Yeah. And I used to. It's been a long time, knock on wood. I always used to get cramps in my toes for some reason. I don't know why.
Whoa.
And it would happen in the middle of the night, and it would wake me up, and it would be so painful. The toes and the calves are where I always get the cramps. And I'll wake up in the middle of the night with a nice calf cramp. And then again, you kind of forget about it because you're half asleep, but you wake up in the morning and you're wondering, like, why does my leg hurt? Why am I limping? Oh, that's right, because the stupid cramp that woke me up at 3 a.m. So the message of the day, I guess, is to hydrate. But we're working. This is Michael Jordan's flu game today. We're working hurt. I got my cramp in my right calf, and somehow I think we're going to make it through. Speaking of basketball, just as impressive as a performance last night as me out there, two games, the Bucks-Celtics and the Grizzlies-Warriors. So one game was the best we've had this postseason. The other game was the largest blowout we've had this postseason. And there's lessons from each of them. Let's start with the Bucks-Celtics, which was just an incredible game. And the fact that the Bucks were able to win that game. They're down six on the road, a minute 45 to go. They come back and they win. They outscored the Celtics 33-21 in the fourth quarter. The Bucks didn't miss a three in the fourth quarter. They went 6-for-6. The Celtics didn't make one. The Bucks killed the Celtics on the offensive glass in that fourth quarter, including that missed foul shot in the end, the final minute when they get the putback. I think it was to tie it at the time. Huge play. And yesterday on the show, I was discussing all of these playoff series and how in the other three series of the playoffs, it was a clear example of a team that's been there before against a team that's trying to go through it for the first time. And how important it is to have the experience for moments like this. And we also discussed how important Game 5 is in these series when tied at 2. The team that wins Game 5 wins 82% of the time. Now, the Celtics were at home last night, Game 5, biggest game of the season. They're at home. They're up 14 in the fourth quarter. And yesterday, when I discussed the other three series, we knew it was clear. The Warriors have that championship DNA. We don't know that yet about the Grizzlies. The Suns, championship DNA. We don't know it yet about the Mavericks. The Heat, championship DNA. We don't know it yet about Philadelphia. And I wondered yesterday, when it came to the Bucks Celtics, we know the Bucks, the defending champs, they have championship DNA. But I wasn't so sure about the Celtics. Because Boston, under this group, is kind of underachieved in the playoffs. They haven't made it to an NBA Finals yet. And so last night was that big test. Where I was wondering yesterday on the show, we're going to find out, is this another example like these other series where you have a team, the defending champs in Milwaukee, going up against a team that's still trying to figure out how to win these types of games. And the Celtics came out, and they jumped out to a double-digit lead, and they played really well for the first three quarters. And I thought, okay, or maybe the Celtics are ready to take that next step. Maybe in our conversation yesterday, I did maybe overlook Boston going through the layers of the NBA playoffs, ready to go win the East and win a big game. And then it all came crashing down. And the Bucks showed why they're the defending champs. Milwaukee is probably the most underrated team in the league over the past 2 years, which is odd to say about a team that just won a championship, but yet still constantly being doubted. In fact, ESPN.com gave the Celtics still a 78% chance of winning the series going into last night. I imagine that percentage was a lot higher when they were up by double digits at home in the fourth quarter. And yet Milwaukee found a way to win. And that's the difference between the teams in the NBA. The teams that know how to win big games like that and the teams that seemingly find ways to lose big games like that. And the winner of Game 5 wins 82% of the time in that series, and now Milwaukee's going home for Game 6. That was huge. Boston has blown two games in this series in the final minute. Kind of like Memphis, where Memphis, even with the blowout last night, right, you go back to the game prior, they coughed up a lead in the final minute. You go back to Game 1, John Morant didn't make the layup on the final possession. It could be a completely different series. The Grizzlies could already have this series won. Same idea for Boston. If the Celtics were able to close out the last couple of games, they'd already be moving on. That's the difference this time of year. You have a team that knows what they're doing, the Warriors, the Bucks, Miami, Phoenix, going up against teams that don't really know what they're doing, don't really know how to win these big games. Philadelphia, Dallas, for the most part, the Grizzlies, even with last night's dominating performance. And then it looks like still the Celtics as well. Just when you thought the Celtics were ready to break through, this is the team that's going to do it. Finally, Jason Tatum's going to lead them to the NBA Finals. They're going to win the East. And yet, you saw last night, they're not quite ready for the big moment. The Bucks still are. And what's most impressive about Milwaukee is, of course, they're doing all this without Chris Middleton. Right? That they're doing this against a really good Boston team without their second-best player. And yesterday, Drew Holiday was fantastic. Hasn't been great in the playoffs. He was incredible last night, making the biggest plays in the final minute. And Giannis went for 40 more points. And he had a couple guys off the bench score double digits. And the great thing about Milwaukee also, which allowed them to be champions last year and one of the best teams in the league this year, is that everybody knows their role. They know their part. Even when Middleton's out there. And Drew Holiday. They understand this is Giannis's team. We have no problem being the sidekick. Drew Holiday, you know, has no problem playing that tough defense. Brook Lopez has turned himself into a three-point shooter. Right, Wesley Matthews does the little thing. Same with Portis. Had some big plays last night. He went for a double-double. Whereas on a lot of other teams, you have those Robins that want to go be a Batman somewhere. They want to be the star. You have a number two that wants to be a number one. In Milwaukee, they have no problem. Drew Holiday, when Chris Middleton's healthy. Everybody else, even Grayson Allen, Brook Lopez, the entire team, they have no problem being in the shadow of Giannis. And when it's time for them to make their big plays, these role players, they certainly do, and boy, did they last night. The biggest plays, yeah, Giannis had a big three, He played really well. He had blood coming down the side of his face, goes for 40 points, had a double-double. He was good last night. And when he missed a big foul shot, he had a teammate pick him up. And he had Jrue Holiday make the two biggest plays of the game in the final 15 seconds. That's what makes a championship team. It's what I said about Al Horford earlier in this series. When you have the other guys, the role players, make the big plays. When it's not just about your star, you can't count on Giannis to do everything. Right? LeBron has needed help along the way. Steve Kerr and John Paxson had to make the big shots for Michael Jordan from time to time. Robert Horry, how many big shots did that guy hit? For the Spurs, for the Lakers, you had Shaq, you had Kobe, but Robert Horry hit some of the biggest shots. You need those role players to make the biggest plays. That's how you go win a championship like the Bucks did last year. And after winning last night, they take command of this series. And I think the winner of this series, I think this is the Eastern Conference Finals, right? The winner of this series goes on to win the whole thing in the East. But what a wild game last night, and somehow Milwaukee, I was shocked when they found a way to win. I'll be honest with you. The Celtics were up, I think it was, they were up six, like I said, final 2 minutes. I stepped away from the TV. I thought they had it won. I went to go do something. I come back, the Bucks were in the lead. I said, hold on. I had to rewind the game on the DVR. How did this happen? It was a wild comeback, a crushing loss for the Celtics that's essentially going to end their season. And in the process, you found out how the Bucks are a championship team and why the Celtics aren't quite ready yet. Just like Philadelphia and Dallas, and I still think Memphis, even after last night's win, which takes me to that game. What an impressive win for the Grizzlies. Now, if you're the Warriors, we saw this a little bit in Game 4, where the Warriors kind of came out a little bit slow, almost like they were taking the Grizzlies lightly, or just realizing or knowing, like, yeah, we could turn it on in the fourth quarter, still win, and that's what they did. They did not play well for the first three quarters, certainly the first half of Game 4. Last night, they never really played well at all. And if you look at Memphis now, two games without Ja Morant, they have outscored the Warriors by over 30 points over the two games. They have outscored the Warriors in six of eight quarters without Ja Morant. It is really fascinating and impressive how good the Grizzlies can play without their star player. In fact, at times, they actually look even better. And I always go back to the old Patrick Ewing theory, and it's the same idea in the NFL when you take away a star receiver that no longer do you feel like you have to force feed the football to that wide receiver. No longer does the ball stick with the over-dribbling star of a Ja Morant, a Trae Young, some of these other guys. And when you remove them, now you can play more like a team, and you actually play for the best shot, and you actually run your plays and your sets. And other guys feel the need to step up like a Jalen Brunson without Luka Doncic, realizing, like, yeah, it's a little bit more on me, and they play really well. It's interesting when you take away star players from certain teams that the teams can actually get better. That's been the case for the Grizzlies a lot of times this year. Went 20-5 in the regular season without Ja, and now just won a huge playoff game, largest win of the postseason last night without Ja. Now, when it comes to Golden State, I think they're still fine. You're up 3-2. You're coming back home. I think that's why they maybe took it a little bit easy last night, realizing the position they're in. You'd love to end the series as quickly as you could, but hey, you're up 3-1, right? You're going to Memphis. That's okay. Let's try to win it game six at home. But a little fun with numbers. What's interesting is no team has ever won an NBA Finals when losing a playoff game by 40 points. Only two have ever made an NBA championship when losing by 40 points in the playoffs. The Warriors last night lost by 39, not 40. Maybe we're splitting hairs, maybe it's semantics, but last year in the playoffs, the Bucks lost a playoff game by 39 and went on to win the championship. So is there really that big of a difference between a 39-point loss and a 40-point loss? Maybe not, but the numbers do tell you that we've never had a champion lose by over 40 points in a playoff game, but the Bucks last year did win after losing by 39. The Warriors last night lost by 39, and yet I'm not overly concerned. I think they close out the series at home in Game 6 and still have every chance to try to go win a championship this year. But it does show some of that vulnerability, right? It's the second largest postseason loss for the Warriors in over 50 years. You go back to when they were in their prime a few years ago when they had Kevin Durant, something like that I don't think happens. It does show that the Warriors are a little vulnerable, and maybe at times when we see them playing well, we romanticize thinking back to how good they were just a few years ago. They're not quite that same. They're still a really good team. They're not quite the same team as a few years ago, and I think that was evident last night, or really the last two games. To lose by 39 without Ja Morant, that's embarrassing. Good news is they're still up 3-2, heading home now for Game 6. I think they take care of business. What was also embarrassing was this little tidbit. This was from before the game. Kendra Andrews on ESPN yesterday sharing this little anecdote about the Warriors' game plan for last night's game. Here's how that went.
Malika, I also asked Stephen Curry what the plan was tonight, and he just turned around and looked at me and said, whoop that trick. That is our game plan.
Oh, my goodness. Taking their own catchphrase and putting it back. Thank you so much, Kendra. I really appreciate the time.
So Steph Curry yesterday before the game, right, used the Grizzlies catchphrase. I guess there's a song that they play all the time. Whip that trick. And to say that before the game, to talk a little trash, and then go out there and get whooped yourself and get curb stomped by 39 points, that's a tough look. Now, again, I think the Warriors win game six, but that's embarrassing, right? If you're going to talk that trash before, you better go out there and back it up. And Curry didn't play well yesterday. Nobody played well for the Warriors. Maybe the Grizzlies, right, to paraphrase Michael Jordan, took that personally. And they handed the Warriors their business last night. That series continues another game. I think the Warriors will take care of business in game six. You know, it's interesting. We had, like I said, probably the best game of the playoffs so far. And then the largest margin of the playoffs in the same night. And both were, in some ways, I wouldn't say equally interesting, but takeaways from both games. Fascinating storylines. The fact that the Grizzlies can play like that without Ja Morant is remarkable. And the fact that the Bucks can find a way to win like that in Boston and come back and beat the Celtics, not only impressive for Milwaukee, but also pretty embarrassing and demoralizing for the Celtics. That was probably their season going out the window last night at home. Hey, when we come back, we get the NFL schedule tonight. How exciting. We'll talk about that. Plus, speaking of scheduling, the ACC schedule. We get a little look into what we may be able to expect from the ACC and their scheduling when it comes to football moving forward. Let's talk some football schedules when we come back. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, we get the NFL schedule fully released tonight. And also some news on the ACC football schedule moving forward and what to expect. It's all that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We open the day talking about the NBA postseason and how we had both crazy games last night, but for opposite reasons. Crazy game in the Bucks comeback. And then you had the Grizzlies without their star rolling through the Warriors after they were talking a little trash, feeling good about themselves. So now all four series in the NBA playoffs are 3-2 with the Heat, Sixers tonight, Suns, Mavericks. So before we get to the NFL stuff, Trent, let me ask you, how many of these series do you think will go to seven games? Let's go one by one.
Okay.
You get tonight, game six, Heat, Sixers. The Heat are up 3-2 on the road. Do you think your Miami Heat close it out tonight, or do we get a game seven?
I think we close it out tonight in Philly, Luke. I loved what I saw in game five, and I think that energy rolls over. I'm a little nervous because it is in Philly, and Philly's an incredibly hostile environment, but I trust this Miami Heat team. If the bench plays as well as they did last game, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, talking to you fellas, we're gonna do all right tonight. I think it's going to wrap up in six.
I'm curious to see what you get from Embiid and Harden tonight. Season on the line. Harden mostly has been lousy, and Embiid is just so beat up. We saw that last game. How is he going to bounce back tonight? Also tonight, Suns Mavericks. So the Suns go on the road. The Suns are up 3-2. They're favored tonight in Dallas. Do the Mavericks force a game seven, or do we wrap up this series tonight?
I want to say this wraps up in six. I trust the Suns have been the best team all year in the NBA, but I love this scrappy Mavs team. I think they got disrespected in the last game, got absolutely blown out, and I think that they will send it to seven. Luka's going to have a night tonight. Whatever his point total is, folks, take the over. That's what I'm looking at.
I also have to say, Devin Booker, who I like, has become really unlikable in this series. And the Suns in general. Enough of the Luka mocking and the guy's dropping 40 on you. I know you're leading the series 3-2, but you're also the one seed. The Mavericks are the four. Luka has nothing to work with. And I love Luka, so maybe that's part of it.
He plays the heel, Devin Booker. It seems like, and he's kind of evolved in that role almost in the last couple of years. He's kind of turned into the guy that's the Mamba mentality, if you will, and just is locked in at all times.
I saw a good description from somebody online. I wish you could credit them. But they said Devin Booker plays like it's his father coaching his AAU team. Right? Like, you're out there. We all know that kid whose father runs the team, so they go out there. They think they're like they run the show. He's a good player, don't get me wrong, but save me all the nonsense. Luke is killing you guys every night. You got no leg to stand on. The two games last night, or the two series last night, you now have the Bucks took a 3-2 lead. They're going home for Game 6. Do we get a Game 7 in that series?
I do believe so. I think the Celtics will take it, and they Jason Tatum will have a massive game. I think Robert Williams, that's his name, right, if I'm not mistaken, yes. The center, he was out in Game 5. So I do believe that this is going to go to 7 games if he's healthy for the next game, Luke. And Marcus Smart's got to step up. I think all their role players have to step up in the moments that they need.
And then also last night you had the Grizzlies-Warriors. The Grizzlies blowing out the Warriors to push it to a 6th game, which is going to be a home game for the Warriors. This is the one I would feel most confident. I think the Warriors, if you're embarrassed, as you were last night, I think they bounce back at home. Do you think the Warriors wrap it up in Game 6?
No doubt. I think it will be a blowout in Game 6. They'll wrap it up in Oracle, you know, in San Francisco. That crowd is always incredibly hostile. It's tough to play there, and they will move on and hopefully play the Suns in the Western Conference Finals, because that's a series that we all want to see.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. I think either way, though. Like, I love Luka so much, and I know Dallas may not be able to keep up with Golden State, but just watching Luka on one side going up against Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on the other side, that could be fun as well. The more Luka, the better for me. But we'll see how things play out. We potentially could get a bunch of Game 7s this weekend in the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs. We'll see how things go. Now, tonight, we get the NFL schedule coming out. Very exciting. If you ever wonder why, or how big football is, specifically the NFL in this country, the fact that we already know the opponents. We know who, in the case of the Carolina Panthers, you know the 17 teams they're going to play. You just don't know the order yet. And you don't know when the games may be, if it's going to be a Thursday night, a Sunday night, a Monday night, Sunday afternoon. Okay, when are we playing this team? Who are we playing before them? When's the bye week? All the little minor details of the schedule. But the big thing is you have to know your opponents. We already have that stuff. And yet it's such a big deal just to get the order of the schedule. You already know who's involved. We just haven't ordered it yet. And also the fact that they can leak out games along the way and everybody eats it up. To the point that, what was it, like Good Morning America, whatever that show is? They're announcing games, random games, telling us yesterday morning, like week 4, the Buccaneers will play the Chiefs. That's how big of a deal the NFL schedule is. And the NFL's smart. They give you a little piece here, right, a little taste. They give you one game here, one game here. The next day they put out, oh, by the way, Mike McCarthy is going back to Lambeau. Right, they give you these little random things along the way. And then tonight we get the full schedule. I'll run through the most interesting games of the schedule. We'll find out when they're actually going to fall in the season tonight. But here are the guys from Daily Wager, which is a gambling TV show on ESPN2. We've had Doug Kazarian on the show a bunch. This was their things to look forward to with the schedule release tonight.
You know, I'm a Rams fan. They're supposed to have one of the hardest schedules in the NFL. Look forward to finding out when they play the Bills and those AFC West opponents. But we are in Las Vegas. I have a lot of friends elsewhere around the world. I want to know when they're going to come ask me to give them a free room. The Raiders are going to have a lot of good games down the street at Allegiant Stadium, so I'm looking forward to what weeks I need to block off or when Chiefs fans come to town from Missouri.
Especially within the division, be competitive AFC West.
Two things. I love the Thursday night schedule because I want to know which teams are going to have to travel far on the road. 4 days to turn around coming off a Sunday game, that can be very difficult. It creates great gambling opportunities. Number two, this one's very specific. When is Baltimore playing Cincinnati? Because the Bengals rolled John Harbaugh's Ravens, not one, but twice last season. I think Baltimore's out for some payback.
And then maybe the game before that for Baltimore, look ahead. Those are the teams that I want to see play those primetime games, the ones with the big bullseye on their back, like Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, who I expect to take a step back this year. Competitive division, no Tyreek Hill. Suspect defense caught a lot of breaks last year. So maybe games after the big high-profile primetime games. So things like that, we really just need to absorb it all and then see what oddsmakers do with that information as well.
The Daily Wager guy is talking about what to look forward to with tonight's schedule release, which will be at 8 p.m. all everywhere. It'll be on ESPN. It'll be on NFL Network. I think it's on some of the other networks as well, like CBS Sports is doing their own thing. And everybody's got something going on. Fox Sports tonight, because it's such a big deal to get the NFL schedule. We love the NFL around here. Now, we don't know, again, the order of these games, but we know who's going to play who. When I look at this schedule, usually we do a top 10 list on Tuesday, so we're not going to – let me just run through some of these games. I think there's 10 of them. But there's a lot of revenge spots in this season, which makes it really interesting. Again, the Mike McCarthy, Green Bay Packers storyline along those lines. But you also get – when I look at the most intriguing games, that we already know are going to be played this year. We just have to find out when. Jaguars-Jets is very interesting because Trevor Lawrence against Zach Wilson both in year two. And they were the top two quarterbacks. They were the two teams, we discussed this yesterday, that I do think have tried to do the most to actually help their quarterbacks. Unlike other teams like the Bears, even the Patriots, the Texans. The Jaguars and Jets are actually trying to put their quarterbacks in a successful spot to try to help them succeed. And it'll be very fascinating to see the two of them go up against one another to see where we're at a year and a half into this whole thing. Who's the better quarterback? Maybe it's neither of them. But there's pressure on those two to go up against one another and find out who the better quarterback may be of the draft class. You have Deshaun Watson, assuming he's playing. And maybe this is something to look forward to tonight with the schedule release. If we believe Deshaun's going to be suspended, where do certain games fall on that Browns schedule, including this one? The Browns go to Houston to take on the Texans. If Deshaun is playing, and say that game's later in the year where he may not be suspended, what will it be like? What's the reaction going to be if and when Deshaun heads back to Houston, now as the quarterback of the Browns after forcing his way out of Houston, and then, of course, all the off-the-field stuff as well? I'd be curious to see that matchup. You have the Dolphins and the 49ers. The Dolphins just hired the offensive coordinator from the 49ers. You have the Niners out in San Francisco, and then now maybe a little bit of the Niners south. And it's also just an intriguing matchup where the Dolphins could be interesting this year if Tua plays well. And you have two teams that may be similar, and you have the mentor against the mentee, and it's an intriguing matchup to see. As mentioned in that clip, the Ravens-Bengals will be fascinating games. In fact, that entire division probably will be, much like the AFC West. Any game in the AFC West is going to be top-notch football. Looking forward to any game that involves the AFC West teams playing one another. The Chargers and the Raiders, the Broncos and the Chiefs, the Chargers and the Chiefs, so on and so forth. Elsewhere on the schedule of games that stand out this NFL season, I mean, the Rams-Buccaneers, of course, will be fantastic. We also get the Chiefs and the Buccaneers, and we also get the Chiefs and the Bills, all big-time matchups between some of the best teams in the league and some of the best quarterbacks. Along those lines, you also get Green Bay going to Buffalo. Josh Allen against Aaron Rodgers. And if that game's later in the year in Buffalo, that only makes it even more exciting. But two of the top quarterbacks in the league and two of the, we believe, top teams in the league. And then you get Broncos-Seahawks, which is not very appealing, but you do get Russell Wilson returning to Seattle. You get the Vikings and the Bills. Of course, they have to throw a Vikings game in there, but you get Stephon Diggs. I believe the game's in Minnesota, returning to Minnesota. What's that response going to be? First time there since the Minneapolis Miracle. It'll be fascinating to see some of this stuff. And the number one game, it's hard to choose. I gave you a couple, right? I mean, the Buccaneers-Rams, the Buccaneers-Chiefs, the Bills-Packers, any combination of these teams. But you also have the Bills going to Kansas City, which, remember what happened last year in the playoffs, that should be a lot of fun as well. Those are the games I'm most looking forward to, and now tonight we'll just find out where they fall on the schedule. And then it makes it even more intriguing. Is it a Monday night game? Is it a Thursday night game? Is one of the teams coming off a bye? Who are they playing the week before? Who are they playing after? Is it late in the season? Yada, yada, yada. We'll get all those details tonight, and we'll break it all down tomorrow. Meanwhile, the ACC, while we're on the subject of football schedules, we broached this subject earlier in the week in regards to getting rid of divisions. And so the ACC, according to reports, are looking at, starting in the 2023 season, next year, a different schedule approach where they'll remove the divisions, and you will have each team play. They're going to call it a 3-5-5 model. You play the same three teams every year, and then you rotate the other 10. You play 5 1 year, you play 5 the next year. And I love this idea because it checks all of my boxes. You get rid of the divisions, so you can play more teams frequently. You still keep some of those rivalries in the conference. And most importantly, with this 3-5-5 model, you play 5 teams 1 year, you play the other 5 the next year. So in a 2-year span, you'll play everybody in the conference, and therefore in a 4-year span, you'll play in every stadium in your conference, which is what I've been calling for years. I think if you go to school at a Clemson, by the time you graduate, assuming you're there for your 4 years or more, you don't leave early to go to the NFL or you don't transfer, whatever it may be, you spend your normal career at Clemson, you should be able to visit every school in the conference. And that's what the ACC seems to be trending towards starting next year, the 3-5-5 model, and I love it. So in the case of Clemson, you'll play the same three teams, the same three ACC teams every year, and then the other 10 you'll rotate. You'll play half 1 year, you'll play the other half the next year, you'll alternate home and road. I love this idea. Now, who may Clemson play? This is all kind of in theory or just guesses right now, but the belief would be NC State, Georgia Tech, Florida State would be the three constants in Clemson's schedule. The three teams that they would play in the ACC every year, and then you rotate the others. NC State, Georgia Tech, Florida State. Earlier this week, I gave you my three. I understand those three. I would swap out Georgia Tech if I was a Clemson fan. It's an easy win, but it's a bore fest. I'd rather give me Miami. That's more intriguing. Imagine Clemson against Miami every year, especially if Miami starts to get better under Mario Cristobal. You can go find the full list online of what people believe will be the strong three, the same three. For example, Miami would play Florida State, Boston College, Pittsburgh every year. North Carolina would face Duke, NC State, and Virginia every year. NC State would face Clemson, Wake Forest, North Carolina, so on and so forth. UNC and Virginia Tech, without running through the full rundown, take my word for it. UNC and Virginia Tech seem to be the ones that would be the biggest beneficiaries of this scheduling. And NC State and Florida State maybe would luck out a little bit. But you could go find the full list online. I love the idea, though, from the ACC that may come into play starting in 2023. Let's rotate these schedules, play everybody, get rid of divisions. It's about time we do this. I don't know why it has taken so long. By the way, one other thing to touch on, and this all comes from the ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips and a conversation he had. Another thing he mentioned, and we've heard this from others in college football, but again, he alluded to the idea of breaking away from the NCAA. More people are talking about it. It's being discussed more often, maybe giving more thought. But college football eventually, in the next decade, maybe the next 8 years, not any time in the immediate near future, but a little bit down the road, breaking away with these power conferences and getting away from that umbrella of the NCAA and going off and doing their own thing. It continues to gain a little more steam. I imagine eventually we'll get there, but now you have the ACC commissioner kind of talking about it as well. Eventually, we probably get to that point where the big schools in college football break off and do their own thing away from the NCAA. When we come back, for SEC football teams this year, best case, worst case scenarios, we'll run through them and we'll do it next. More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. Those days are over. You don't have to sell your body to the night. Roxanne.
Coming up, best case, worst case scenarios for SEC teams this year. More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We were just talking about the NFL schedule coming out tonight. I mentioned some of the games that I'm most intrigued by this year. Now we'll just find out where they fall. Schedules will continue to be leaked throughout the day. It gets to the point where by the time you get to 8 p.m., it's almost meaningless because by then most of the schedules have already been released. We love our football around here. Trent, are you into the schedule release? Are you excited to see what happens tonight?
Absolutely, Luke. I'll be dialed in, ready to go, see what teams are playing, when, and where. It's going to be very fun. This is always a very, very fun day, and it gives you a good overview. And also, it feels like we got football right around the corner, so this is a great day to be a sports fan.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Gives you something to look forward to. Hey, speaking of which, let's look ahead to the SEC. I'll give you a best case, worst case scenarios for these teams in the SEC. And let's run through them in no particular order. Vanderbilt, we could start at the bottom, I guess, in this sense. Vanderbilt, worst-case scenario, I mean, you go winless. I think that's on the table for Vanderbilt pretty much every year. Their win total in Vegas is 1.5, so it's not that far-fetched. Best-case scenario, probably 3, which is sad to say. They have 2 kind of easy games in the non-conference. That's why I think you should take the over 1.5. And then maybe they get a win in the SEC. That's best-case scenario. Now you win those 2 easy non-conference games against, Elon and Northern Illinois. Those are 2 games you should win. And maybe you steal one in the SEC. Hopefully it's not the Gamecocks, right? But Vanderbilt beats somebody. Best case scenario, their ceiling, probably 3 wins. Mississippi State with Mike Leach. I think this needs to be a big year for Mike Leach. And I don't know if they're going to get it. The win range for Mississippi State, I would say anywhere from 4 wins to 8 wins. The floor is probably 4, right? You win at least 4 games. And then the best-case scenario, probably 8. That'd be the most for Mike Leach in 3 years. He's won 6 games the last 2. Can you get me up to 8? That'd be a pretty good thing, right? Obviously, the SEC is so grueling, and Mississippi State, to me, is just not one of the better teams in the conference. They're not ready to compete at the top of their division yet. Certainly behind Alabama, Ole Miss, maybe still Texas A&M. I think LSU will be better this year. Mississippi State, I think you're topping off at maybe 8 wins. Same goes for Missouri. Now, I'm much lower on Missouri than maybe a lot of people. I don't know. I'm down on Missouri this year. I think they could bottom out with 4. What did they have last year, 5 or 6 wins? I think they could take a step in the wrong direction. They lost their quarterback. They lost their running back. They have nobody in the backfield with any sort of experience. The defense was horrendous last year. They had to bring in a new defensive coordinator. It is still the SEC with a tricky schedule. And I think they have an unproven head coach. 1 year at Appalachian State, gets the job in the SEC, was really good his first year, and then disappointing last year. I think he's still a little bit of a question mark. So I'm down on Missouri. I think they win fewer games this year than last year. I put them around 4 to 5 wins this year. But if we're talking best-case scenario, I'll give them a chance to overachieve as well. They won 5 or 6 last year. Yeah, maybe. If everything goes right, things click, maybe they get up to 8 this year. That's probably their ceiling. I don't think they could go higher than that. Ole Miss. I'm a little bit lower on Ole Miss as well than probably most people. Now, if things work out as well as last year, sure, maybe they do get back to 10 wins. I would give that as the ceiling. I don't think they beat Alabama, so there's a loss. And then you probably lose another one along the way. Right? Can you run the table elsewhere? I don't think so. Worst case scenario for Ole Miss, I still think they're at least a bowl team this year. So I put them at 6 to 10 wins. Ole Miss, without their quarterback, it's hard to follow up the success he had last year. Right? Maybe they drop a couple of games. You drop, it would be, what, 3 wins off the record. They go to a bowl game. Worst case scenario, maybe 6 wins. Best case, 10. Kentucky, I would say best case scenario, 10. I think they already hit their ceiling. So the best case scenario would just be duplicating what they did last year. I don't think you can do much better than what they've done. Worst case scenario, I'll say 7. Right? They take a few steps back. You lost the offensive coordinator. People are really high on Will Levis, but I still think he has some things to prove. Obviously, it's a tough SEC. Florida could be better, should be better, maybe this year. Tennessee probably will be better. South Carolina could be better. And as I said earlier this week, I think Kentucky has kind of stayed the same. They've moved laterally while the rest of their division has improved. So I'll put them anywhere from 7 to 10 wins. I think they go to a bowl game. They have a winning season, and they could get up to 10 wins. Auburn, I told you, take the over 5.5 for Auburn. But I would put their win total, their range, at 4 to 7. Best case scenario is probably 7. They won 6 last year. Can you improve by a game? That's not asking too much. But there's a lot of noise around this team and questions around Brian Harsin. And I could see things bottoming out a bit. Now, their non-conference schedule is easy enough that you should get 3 to 4 wins there. So worst-case scenario is probably 4, where maybe they only win 1 game in the SEC. That would really be a worst-case scenario. You win 3 non-conference, win 1 in the SEC, you finish with 4 games, and Brian Harsin is probably gone. When it comes to the Gamecocks, their win range, I would put 4 to 8. Now, last year, they won 7. And so I believe the expectation should be to improve on last year, especially with Spencer Rattler. Can you get to 8 wins? I'm talking regular season specifically. But when you look at their schedule, that would include 4 losses, right? I still think Clemson's a loss. You get Arkansas on the road, week 2. That's a tough one. You have to go to Kentucky. Not an easy game. I think Georgia's a loss. I think Clemson and Georgia are the 2 losses built into the schedule. So there's 2 right there. Then I have to find 2 other losses on this schedule. Give me the combination of going to Arkansas, going to Kentucky, probably Texas A&M at home, maybe even going to Florida, Tennessee at home. If they go 3-2 in that stretch, that's still going to get them to 4 losses. The best case scenario, 8 wins in the regular season. Maybe you could push it to 9. I don't think so. I think 8, if we're being realistic, is the best case. Go to a bowl game, try to get your 9th win there. Worst case scenario, you kind of bottom out and win only 4. Now, when you look at the non-conference schedule, Georgia State, Charlotte, South Carolina State, those should be 3 wins right there. Vanderbilt should be a 4th win. And then 4-8, worst case scenario, right? You don't win another game on the schedule. That truly would be the worst case. Maybe that's a little bit of a too low of a floor. But I would say 4-8 is the win range for the Gamecocks. Texas A&M, I would say 7-10. Not as high on Texas A&M this year either. But maybe I'm underselling them, so I build in the fact that maybe I'm underrating Texas A&M. Maybe they do get to 10 wins. But you have to deal with Ole Miss and LSU and Alabama. I think you certainly lose at least 2 games. But I put them more likely around 7. I think they take a step back this year. They win 7 or 8 games this season, make a bowl game, and are seen as underwhelming once again. Florida, I put 5-8. I think they'll improve this year, but I don't really know. First-year head coach Billy Napier, I got a lot of questions. I don't really know which direction they're going to go into. Are they just going to sneak in, be 500, get into a bowl? Are they going to go 8-4, surprise some people, get some good wins? I could see either or. Arkansas, I put the win total from 5 to 10. I'm really high on Arkansas. I think they could win 10 games this year. They returned their entire coaching staff, quarterbacks coming back. They were really good last year. I think they could get to 10 wins even in the tough SEC. But I will say, as much as I like Arkansas, they do have a tough schedule because not only is it the SEC, they have a tough non-conference. They may have the toughest non-conference schedule in the SEC with BYU, Cincinnati, and there's a third one on there too. Liberty, who they should beat, but it's not some sort of cakewalk. So after the last 2 years, maybe you're waiting for that other shoe to drop if you're Arkansas. Maybe they do fall back to like 6 wins, go 500 to make it to a bowl. But I'm really high on Arkansas. I think they have a good year. I think they're closer to double-digit victories this year. I would put them at maybe 9 with a chance for 10. Tennessee, win range, I'll say 5 to 9. They won 7 last year. I think they'll be better this year. So I think they improve and they can get to 8 wins, potentially 9. But the SEC, again, it's so topsy-turvy. It's such a tough conference. And when you have a first-year head coach with Josh Heupel, sometimes there's a bit of a pop there that you don't get in year two. That teams start to figure out what you're doing a little bit more, or they get familiar with you, or sometimes maybe there's just a little beginner's luck. They got 7 wins last year. I could see them moving in either direction up to 2. I could see them improving by 2. I could see them losing 2, potentially. Worst case scenario, they go 5-7. And then wrapping up, LSU, the win range for LSU, I would say probably 5 to 8. And I put them closer to 8. I think LSU wins 7 to 8 games this year in Brian Kelly's first season. I think that's the ceiling. I think that's the best case scenario. Give me 8 wins in Brian Kelly's first year. I don't think you can ask for much more. Right, you get Alabama, Arkansas, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Tennessee. Can you win 2/3 of your games? That's pretty good. Worst case scenario, they miss a bowl game. I don't think they're going to be terrible. I don't think they're going to be bad. 5-7 may be bad for LSU. But for Brian Kelly's first year, everywhere he's gone, he's been successful right away. I think LSU will be the same way. Worst case scenario, put them at 5-7. Tough schedule. They just miss a bowl game. For Georgia, best case scenario is running the table in the regular season. You get Oregon week one. That's probably your toughest game. Worst case scenario for Georgia, probably 10, for being realistic. Maybe they lose to Oregon and then you lose one game in the SEC. I mean, if we're talking worst case scenario, probably 10. I think they get 11 or 12 wins. And lastly, Alabama. Same idea. Best case scenario, running the table. Worst case scenario, I guess 10 wins. Maybe you lose to an Ole Miss. Maybe Brian Kelly sneaks up on you with LSU. I couldn't see Alabama or Georgia losing 2 games this year, but that is the worst case scenario. If things really go bad this year, imagine that. That's how good these programs are. That's a bad year. Like, oh, shoot, we lost 2 games. I think those are the worst case scenarios for them, losing 2. When we come back, Josh Pate with a nice compliment to the Gamecocks. Plus, when we look at South Carolina, as I just said, I gave you best case, worst case scenario for all those teams in the SEC. When you look at South Carolina, how would you organize the games on their schedule? The built-in wins, losses, and the toss-ups. We'll do it next. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour one of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Ran through the SEC with best case, worst case scenarios for all the teams. When it came to South Carolina, I'd put their win range, like I said, from 4 to 8. 4 might be a little low. Maybe more realistically, it should be 5 to 8. But we do this every year when we look at South Carolina. I put teams in different categories. The automatic wins. That's right, automatic. Automatic losses. The built-in wins and losses to the schedule and your toss-up games. This year for South Carolina, I think the wins built into the schedule, Georgia State at home week one, of course, that's a gimme. I think Charlotte. Now, Charlotte's going to be a little bit tougher game than maybe you would think, but that's at home early on in the season. Of course, you should beat Charlotte. South Carolina State is a gimme. And then I'll say Vanderbilt, even though it's on the road, right? Every time you play, Vanderbilt should be an easy conference win for you every year. So those are the 4 built-in victories in this schedule. The losses, to me, only 2 this year. Usually, there's about 4 built-in losses. I'm only going to say 2. I'm being very generous to the Gamecocks this year. I think it's Georgia and Clemson. Don't think you're winning those games. I know they've beaten Georgia in the past, and they get Georgia at home this year. I don't think you're beating Georgia. It's early in the season. And then Clemson, I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, shortening the gap. It was a 30-point win last year for Clemson. And Clemson did not have one of their better teams in the past decade. They still were 30 points better on the road. This time, now Clemson's home. I think there's still a big gap between those two on the field. So I think that's a built-in loss. Those are only the only two, though, Georgia and Clemson. I would give South Carolina a chance in every other game. And the other ones are at Arkansas, at Kentucky, at Florida, and then at home against Tennessee, Texas A&M, Missouri. I'm not telling you those are easy games, but I'm saying they're winnable. Right? They're toss-ups. Now, the toughest one may be at Arkansas. Maybe I should put that into the built-in losses. It's week two. So it's going to be Spencer Rattler's first SEC game, and it's going to be on the road against Arkansas and that tough defense. Maybe that's not as winnable as I would be giving the Gamecocks credit for this moment, but I'm going to conclude that in the toss-ups. So you have at Arkansas, at Kentucky, at Florida, and then at home against Texas A&M, Missouri, Tennessee. Again, I'm not telling you any of those games are easy, but they're easier than Georgia, Clemson. They're winnable to some degree. And if you go 3-3 in those six, you finish the season 7-5. That's pretty good. You have a winning season, you go to a bowl game, and you go 500 in what I would call those toss-up games, those coin flip games that could go either way. You certainly should never lose to Georgia State, South Carolina State, Vanderbilt, or Charlotte. And you should probably never win against Georgia and Clemson very infrequently. Will that be a win? But those other games, a little bit tighter. And if you split those, you have a winning season and a good year. Coming up, we'll get to that Josh Pate compliment, plus potential sleeper teams in college football this year. Hour 2 is next. It's the Mormon Midday Show on ESPN Radio.